Before we get started, I just want to say I got a thing going on with my retinas. They're kind of distorted, and it's easier for me to read with one eye sometimes. So if I seem to be alternately closing and opening my right eye, that's what it is. I'm not actually flirting with Sheila. So be careful. Be very careful not to be ensnared by words or stained by the teachings of the Buddhas and the ancestors. The quote is from one of my favorites, Basui Tokusho, a 14th century Japanese master. And a lot of his teaching was just by asking questions. Who is the one that is sick? Who is the one that wants to be enlightened? What is my mind? Who is the master? Questions, living words to carry for a lifetime, not dogma to be learned and understood. The point of this is the quote is that if you don't know who you are, if you don't know where you stand with the universe, you can be getting a lot of information without a good context. Or as Ed Levy would say, watch out for undigested wisdom. Master Isan has said that knowledge and understanding are excrement. They cloud the minefield and are not the path. And Roshi has said that enlightenment is not from learning, but from unlearning. Having said all that, you should see my Zen library, a stack of books up to the ceiling. And I have to ask myself, is all this going outside really done me any good? Should I be looking inside instead? Both of my teachers here have told me that I should find out who I am. Sensei often tells us that we're more than we think we are. And Roshi has a little exercise in self-embarrassment that he sometimes subjects us to during sesshins. Some of you old timers are familiar with it. If you're not, let this be a warning. He pairs us up and tells us to face each other and take a few minutes to alternatively say who you are. And, you know, it's a lot like, well, I'm a husband, I'm a father, I'm a truck driver, I'm a school teacher, Democrat, Republican, baker, gardener, whatever. And he prefaces it by saying, speak from the heart, there are no right or wrong answers. Right. I've been in this business for a long time, and I feel that I should be doing something a little more learned than reciting a grocery list of hobbies and titles. So for no more noble reason than to do a better job the next time we have this exercise, I decided to find out who I am. So just who am I and how to find out? And before I start, I just want to badly paraphrase something from Jamie's fine talk a couple of months ago. Don't try this at home. This is something that I've been working on myself for a number of years. It's very personal to me. If something resonates with you, that's fine, but I really can't recommend it for anybody else. It turns out that the Buddha actually gave us the tools that we need to find out who we are. And they're hidden in plain sight, right at the beginning of the Heart Sutra. Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva, doing deep prajna paramita, perceived the emptiness of all five conditions and was freed of pain. The five conditions, the skandhas. There's a number of ways of translating them. I like red pines the best. He calls them pillars because they support our understanding of the universe. And they serve as tools to help our little minds figure out it all. Everything in your head got there through the skandhas. They are who you are. What could be better than using them to find out who are you? The classic case for this is Avalokiteshvara. In Japanese, his name is Kanzaon. We mispronounce his name on mornings during the Emejuku Kan Gyo chant. Kanzaon means, hear the sounds of the world. And he or she, it's not clear, got the name because he clearly heard the cries of suffering from the world and was moved to deep compassion. The short form of Kanza Om is Kanom, which means simply hear sounds, because that was her practice. What is hearing? Who is hearing? What is sound? He deeply looked into his perception of sound, and he realized that there was no hearer and there was no sound. There was just hearing. And he's extrapolated from this that all of the skandhas are likewise empty, that it was just the activity and there's no really one that's doing it. And I've been working with number 3, 4, and 5, perception, reaction, and consciousness. Now, occasionally one finds things in the literature encouraging you to watch the watcher, or Charlotte Tocobeck, observe the observer. And basically the point is you should use awareness to look at your own consciousness to find out who you are. And the great proponent of this is a 12th century Soto master, Tian Tong Hongzhi. And he was the abbot of Tian Tong Monastery about a century before Tian Tong Rujing, who was Dogen's teacher. And her tradition was, if you were abbot of a monastery, you took the name of the monastery as part of your own name. So we have the two Tian Tongs, and actually the third Tian Tong, who was a direct ancestor as well. So you could say this monastery is a real hotbed of Soto learning, if you can imagine such a place as a hotbed of Soto learning. Rujing and Dogen often praised Hongzhi, and Dogen called the practice of pivoting the light around to look inside, turning the light of awareness around and looking inside, the essential Zen art. He said, you should stop the intellectual practice of pursuing words and learn the stepping back, of turning the light around and shining back. Mind and body will naturally drop off and the original face will appear. It struck me that this is probably the most direct way of finding out who I am. And I would like to, Hongzhi's teachings of Ekko Hensho are actually all in verse. And I will go over some of them later. But right now, I'm just going to skip that. And I would like to thank Carol for introducing me to his work. So what is this mind I should be pivoting the light onto, and whatever does that mean? Where does my unending stream of thoughts come from? Who called for all this stuff, and what is the intended market for it all? Ekko Hensho doesn't mean to stop thinking. It means just to watch your thinking. Just be aware of it. If something comes up, take a look at it. Is it reflected in your body? Is there a pattern or a strategy here? It used to be, when I was caught in monkey mind or having a thought, I would beat myself up after, oh, there I am. I would take full ownership of it, thinking again, I have to stop this. But with Ekko Hensho, you just watch. And what I found is that you have to slow your mind down, and it takes a little bit of practice. But essentially, I get to a point where thoughts are coming up, and they're just barely noticeable. And I catch them, and they're gone. And another one comes up, and it's gone. And it's like they're just sticking their nose into my consciousness, and I catch them and they're gone. Or as Marilyn would say, not taking the bait. And I actually realize that I'm watching myself think. I'm watching my mind in action, and I'm just an observer. I really have nothing to do with all this stuff that's coming up. It's just coming up. It's like Avalokiteshvara in his hearing. He was just a bystander. It was not active on my part. And it's very satisfying getting actually see, if not actually seeing who I am, at least clearly seeing who I am not. I've gotten interested lately in the interface between awareness and discursive thought. I'm doing the dishes or cutting the grass, and all of a sudden I'm judging my hoarding neighbor or wondering how to keep my wife from overfeeding the dog. What happened? Sometimes I think of it as like a tag team match between my skandhas and myself. I perceive something, and then I quickly give it a name, a label, or a judgment. That's what your fourth scandal reaction is just waiting for. It's actually your storehouse consciousness, it's your memory. And its job is to connect something coming in with everything else. And that's monkey mind. It just takes off and all this stuff just gets piled on and piled on. And all it takes is a cracked sidewalk, uncut grass, a yellow Corvette, or my favorite jump starter, the Let's Go Brandon sticker still on my neighbor's cars. Once the connection is made, your reaction scandal just takes off. It's in monkey mind mode, and your consciousness is just watching the whole show, again, like Kano and his hearing. And I've had a couple of very clear examples of this lately. That I like to share. I have a little pond in Livingston I like to walk around. It's like six times around is a mile. It's not very long. And I was walking around one time and I noticed a color piece cloth on the ground and I didn't pay any attention to it. The next time I went, I made a pass, I said, oh, it's a face mask. Jan makes face masks. She loves them. She must have made dozens. She wears them. My daughter makes them. I really hate them. If I'm wearing a face mask and my hearing aids, the cords just get all tangled up and it's a mess. I like the paper ones better than the cords on this thing. All of that came from, oh, that's a face mask on the ground. And I had nothing to do with it. I was just watching. So leaving the park, I saw a man walk up, a little white dog. And we said hello, and I took another look. Oh, it's a poodle. My dog Willow has a little friend that's a little white poodle. She has another friend that's actually a combination of poodle and Australian shepherd. And she has another dog, just got another dog that's also a combination of Australian shepherd and poodle. And the dogs just don't look alike. When you breed purebreds, you know what you're going to get, but when you're breeding, making hybrids, you don't know what you're going to get. All of that from going from the little white dog to this poodle. Okay? So these all, and I see all the recollections are just empty of any meaning whatsoever. It's just something that's coming up in my head, and I really have nothing to do with it. One of my favorite self-awareness teachers is a Hindu, Sri Ramana Maharshi. And I think if we weren't wearing fast links, I would probably see some smiles about now. He likens our mind to a caterpillar. You watch a caterpillar move from branch to branch, and he's very careful not to let go of the first branch until he's clearly on the second branch. And that's the way our minds work. We all seem to have something in mind going from one thought to another. We never have a chance to just enjoy the mystery or a bit of not knowing. So how to break the habit? What I found is you have to catch yourself doing it. And this takes practice, but you can do it. And catching yourself is the first step. I think we all of us that have taken the precepts know that when you go in to talk about a precept with Roshi, he has very little interest in your brilliant, totally original interpretation of the precept involved. He wants to know how you catch yourself breaking it. That's the first step in going back and actually getting out of the habit of doing that. You have to catch the transition to monkey mind and backtrack to what the original trigger was. And before another trigger catches your attention, and you're totally lost. You know, it's like fishing, catch and release. Something comes up, let it go, and find out where it came from. And it's a joy seeing my attention go back to awareness when I caught myself in the act of doing it. What I have noticed lately is that anxiety, unhappiness, and confusion seem to predispose the awareness discursive transition. There's certainly enough anxiety in the world right now. We have war, we have a pandemic, and oh my God, high gas prices. I see that inside my head is a safe place. I know what's going to happen. There are no nasty surprises. And it's a very comfortable place to hang out. And I have clearly perceived a greater difficulty maintaining awareness lately with all that's going on. And inside my head is a safe place, retreating to the sanctuary of old fantasies and plans, and oh, the personal soap operas. I think you know what I'm talking about. Retreating to a time I was ignominiously wronged by someone who should have known better. And it's a bit painful revisiting it, but morbidly satisfying seeing myself as the wrong hero of my own story. And safe, an easy escape from a world that's become more troubling lately. Charlotte Joko Beck refers to the transition between awareness and discursive thought as the icy couch. And it took me a while to find out what this really meant. What she's saying is that the icy couch is yourself. You're uncomfortable, you're not at ease, and you tend to slide off into something that you know inside your head. She also said that the switch between awareness and discursive thought was the gateless gate. Just as an aside, Rosha gave a nice talk a couple of weeks ago about a couple of well-known lines from the Genjo Koan, Dogen's Genjo Koan. Dogen said that we should be realized through the 10,000 things. Now, 10,000 is kind of Chinese shorthand for everything, the myriad things. And what he means, and it's also written as a single character, and what he means is that you should see everything at once as a beautiful, indivisible entity. What you do when you break down everything you see, labeling it, naming it, all that stuff, is you're seeing 10,000 things one at a time. And that's not what he wants you to do. You have to see it all at once without breaking it down. We go through life commenting and judging everything we see, plodding from branch to branch, without knowing we live in a beautiful forest. Our naming is creating a personal one-to-one relationship with separate things in our surroundings. We are tying little pieces of our environment toward our small self, our personal way of looking at things. This labeling is the lifeblood of our small self, to when Dogen wants us to lose, but we can't because we keep reinventing it. I opened with a quote from Basawi, and I'd just like to give you a few more of his tidbits. This mind which directs the self is the essence of the transmission outside the scriptures and not through words. If you truly perfect enlightenment, realizing in this manner, not only will the rare words and wonderful phrases of Buddhas and patriarchs become the self, but there will be nothing in all creation that is not the self. If you clearly penetrate the truth of looking into your own nature, arousing the great prajna wisdom and realizing that all names and forms are illusion. You will never again have feelings of attachment to either existence or emptiness. All readings from the sutras are ultimately destructive. If you truly want to read the sutras, you first have to awaken the mind that reads. The wonderful dharma of one's own mind does not change through successive eons. It is the essence of all sutras. If you want to comprehend this essence, you should know that the voices of frogs and worms, the sound of wind and raindrops, all speak the wonderful language of the Dharma. And that birds in flight, swimming fish, floating clouds, and flowing streams all turn the Dharma wheel. With dead words, understanding depends on context. With living words, understanding has exhausted all-knowing. Hongzhi's teachings are all in verse, and I would like to share one of those with you. Here's a selection called The Backward Step and the Upright Cauldron. With the depths clear, utterly silent, thoroughly illuminate the source, empty and spirited, vast and bright. Even though you have lucidly scrutinized your image, and no shadow or echo meets it, searching throughout, you still see that you have distinguished between the merits of 100 undertakings. You must take the backward step and directly reach the middle of the circle from where the light issues forth. Carefully discern that naming engenders beings and that these rise and fall with intricacy. Traveling the world, meeting conditions, the self joyfully enters samadhi in all directions and accepts its function, which is to empty out the self so as not to be full of the self. The empty valley receives the clouds. The cold stream cleanses the moon. Everything everywhere comes back to the golden ground. Not a hair has been shifted, bent, or raised up. Despite 100 uglinesses or 1,000 stupidities, the upright cauldron is naturally beneficent. Zhao Zhou's answers, clean your bowl, wash your bowl, or drink your tea, do not require making arrangements. From the beginning, they have always been perfectly apparent. A while ago, Sensei Michelle gave an excellent guided meditation on softening the belly based on Stephen Levine's writings. I'd like to share, there's a few lines at the end that reach me differently every time I hear them. See awareness as the light of knowing in the mind and body. Awareness recognizes consciousness. Who are you?